explicit nature. Discretion is advised.
This is Sports Saturday with Jeff Paul and Bernie Sablicki.
The two of you were under restraining orders to stay away from each other.
Let's get ready to rumble!
Well, you're going to get it now.
Sports Saturday is powered in part by Green City Garage, an environmentally responsible garage in South Burlington, working on all makes and models, specializing in your family's car, truck, or SUV. Top Hat Entertainment, helping you with all your party needs, from DJs to inflatables. They have it all. Vermont Mortgage Company, mortgage expertise dedicated to Vermonters. See how easy obtaining the right mortgage can be. And Romanto's Pizza, delivering within a 10-mile radius of Taft Corners.
Taft Corners is in Williston.
Try them for your next wing order, too. 879-1000.
You need to start throwing bombs, baby!
This is Sports Saturday on 101.3 ESPN.
Living the dream, baby, living the dream.
Living the dream and taking you with us. It's Sports Saturday on 101.3 ESPN and 101.3ESPN.com. I am your host. I'm back from my two-week sabbatical. I'm back on the air, excited to be here. And Bernie now is out because, you know, Bernie's a very hardworking man. You know, he's probably got to go work like four or five games today. Probably has to coach a couple.
That's what he tells you.
Yeah, mow the lawn, go to the grocery store for the wife. So he is out, but our good friend from the Burlington Free Press, award-winning Burlington Free Press sports writer, Austin Danforth. Good morning, buddy.
Hey, man, you're looking tan.
Well, I spent a couple weeks. I spent 8 days in Jamaica. You talk about a great place, Jamaica. The nicest island I've ever been to.
It's Irie.
I don't know what that means.
Is that something they say?
I never heard Irie. I heard a lot of Mon.
It's all Irie and Ja.
And welcome home, Mon. I've heard that a lot. I'm like, this is just like home. But I'm going to tell you something. What a nice island that was. We had a great time. We had an amazing time while we were there. But I'll tell you something about the sun. It is intense. It is such intense. The heat is so terrible down there. But you put on the sunscreen, you have a good time. It was great. I will say one quick story about Jamaica. Everybody down there says hello to you all the time.
Yeah.
I mean, everybody is so nice to you that you kind of get into this mindset, this non-United States mindset, that everybody wants to say hello to you. So the first thing I did when I got off the airplane in New York City at JFK was, after I got through customs, I got my bag and I started to walk to my next flight to come home to Burlington. And there were two, you know, big police people, you know, staring at me. Yeah, so yeah. I said, hey, how you doing? And they looked at me like, what the hell are you looking at? I was like, whoa, wait, that's right, I'm home. Nobody wants to say hi to me here anymore. So it's good to be back. Austin, it's good to have you here, man.
Yeah, good to be here.
Last time we were here, if you remember, your Capitals were down 0-2, I believe.
In the first round.
And you were just whining and all upset and freaking out. And, you know, and now here we go. Now they're 1-0. They're three games away from competing and trying to win a Stanley Cup. What do you think?
Last night I'm watching the game at the Burlington Free Press office, and this big grin is creeping across my face, and I'm screaming stuff at the TV every time the Capitals score, and Alex Bobby's like, wow, I think, okay.
Like, now, Capital fans, and I have a couple of close friends that are so diehard Capital fans.
Yeah.
But you're jaded fans, right? I mean, you are like the Red Sox fan pre-2004.
Yeah.
I'm just waiting for the ball to drop.
I've spent the last 4 or 5 years increasingly like withdrawing my emotional investment until they get deeper into the playoffs. And so like finally it's rewarded.
And they really are playing good hockey.
They are.
Obviously what they did to beat Pittsburgh. I mean, just to beat the Pens. I mean, a team that won two Stanley Cup championships in a row. And the game that they clinched in was kind of tells you how well they're playing. The win, that a game that Pittsburgh had to win.
Yep.
You know, obviously an overtime game. Pittsburgh finally played a little bit of defense for the first time, I would say, most of the season. But the Caps find a way. An unfortunate turnover for the Pens. He breaks away. He makes the goal, and that's it.
Yeah, that's what the Pens have done to the Caps over the years.
Right.
And the Penguins, they're so skilled and so disciplined that you give any break and they're going to make you pay. And this time it was the Caps that did that to them.
And it was
really fun to watch.
And doesn't Alex Ovechkin just need this?
Yes.
I mean, I feel like he's, and again, no one's going to say that Alex Ovechkin isn't one of the greatest NHL players, maybe of all time, especially of this era. But he's got that stigma around him that he cannot win the big game.
Yeah.
It's always been Sidney. It's been always Sidney Crosby here, and then I would say Alex Ovechkin right behind it.
Yep.
With a win in this thing, I mean, Ovechkin all of a sudden can, you know, I mean, all of a sudden the respect comes right back to Alex
Ovechkin. I think
Ovechkin.
The last time I was on, which a few weeks ago here, I was saying how, you know, Ovechkin, when you think about it, what other, you know, player has been one of the best two in his era and has, you know, never made a conference final, let alone a final in any sport. Finally heard that about a week ago on the NBC broadcast, and I was like, thank you, validation. And then, you know, he got it done, finally.
Well, I'm really happy for it. We'll talk about that. Listen, let's get this show started. Okay, Aaron, well done getting our next guest on. I mean, normally we like to kind of, you know, ham and egg it here a little bit before we have our first guest. 655-6672 is the number to call if you want to join the conversation. You can also text us here at Sports Saturday on the Town Fair Tire text line, 802-655-6672. But hey, listen, you and I both know the fact that I just talked hockey for 5 minutes is a big deal. That's the longest 5 minutes of my life because I don't talk a lot of hockey here. Let's get Bill back to talk to something that I do know about, which is some baseball. And there was a huge series this week, in case you didn't know, Austin. The New York Yankees and the Boston Red Sox.
Yeah.
Yeah, kind of a big week for baseball, especially for fans around here. And who better to get the Sox perspective than our friend from the Boston Globe, Peter Abraham, joins us live here on the TikTok Viewers Guest Line. Good morning, Pete. How you doing today?
Hey, guys. How are you?
Hey, so before we get into last night's game, obviously a tough one for Boston last night, a tough one for New York in that matter. I think there may have been a letdown for both teams, but there was a lot of talk on TV this past week with those two teams playing in the Bronx that there was playoff intensity at Yankee Stadium. I'm assuming you were there. Tell us a little bit about what it was like there.
Yeah, you know, to sit there and hear the noise at Yankee Stadium, it did sound like an October game, and I covered the Yankees before I started covering the Red Sox for the Globe, and it reminded me of a lot of the playoff games that I covered. And just it's funny, before that series, Aaron Boone and Alex Cora and all the players were falling all over themselves to say this was just another series and not a big deal and just like any other game, and they all count the same. But when they start playing, that just goes out the window. And even afterward, Cora was sort of forced to admit, you know, this was something different, this was something special. And as you alluded to, I think we saw what happened last night. They both kind of had letdowns that didn't play well.
You know, Alex Cora was interesting to me. I've watched post games especially after the first two Yankee wins, the second one being a very difficult loss for the Red Sox. But if you're a Red Sox fan, you really have to appreciate Alex Cora's personality, right? He just seems like a different type of cat for Boston and for that market. His personality seems to be perfect for the type of team the Red Sox have.
Yeah, so far that seems to be the case, and they have a younger team, and he's definitely been able to connect with those guys. And anytime a team makes a managerial change, it seems like they always try and go in a different direction than what they had before. And John Farrell was, you know, kind of a stoic guy, somebody who didn't look at managing as, you know, his responsibility was to become friends with the players. He thought his job was to manage the players. He kind of went at it with some old school sensibilities. And they had a lot of success early on in his tenure, obviously, winning the World Series, and he connected very well to veteran players. And when they were looking for a change, they went really, you know, in the other direction. And we got a younger guy, got somebody who doesn't feel like you can get too close to the players. That's what they did with Houston and their young team, and obviously that was very successful. So, it's funny. Like, I think teams always feel like they need to go in the other direction. And the Red Sox have had some good fortune doing that with Terry Francona. It didn't work out very well with Bobby Valentine, and it has worked out so far with Alex Cora.
Hey, looking at the standings, New York and Boston are neck and neck, both 26-12 at this point. After seeing them, you know, three games this week, on the field, what was your biggest takeaway, you know, differences for each team?
You know, I mean, actually, when you look at them and the composition of their rosters, they're a lot alike. Both teams have some very expensive players in prominent roles, especially pitchers. And both teams have a pretty solid core of young guys who I think are going to be part of the rivalry for a long time. And you look at the Red Sox with Betts and Benintendi and Devers, and you look at the Yankees with, you know, Gleyber Torres and Gary Sanchez and Miguel Andujar. There's some good, solid core kind of position players that are going to be around for a long time. But at the same time, you know, the Yankees are really relying on Tanaka. They need him to be good. The Red Sox need Sale to be good and Price to be good. So they're teams with high payrolls, but at the same time, they're teams with some exciting young talent. The managers are a lot alike, similar backgrounds, rookie managers, guys who came from the TV side largely. So it's I think when you look at the two teams, it's for both fan bases, it's interesting because it used to be the Yankees kind of went at it one way and the Red Sox went at it in a completely different way. The Yankees spent a lot of money and the Red Sox were a player development organization. Now they're both kind of looking at it in sort of the same methods in terms of building their teams.
Do you think Dave Dombrowski has that mentality, though? I mean, to me, Dave Dombrowski is the kind of guy that comes in and brings the guys in. I mean, he's a guy to win first. You know, his mentality isn't to develop, and at least from his history, at least the way it was in Detroit. You know, I've always asked that question, you know, because now it seems as if he's the guy that's kind of come in and taken that Red Sox farm system, and he's kind of sold that a little bit to bring in, say, a Chris Sale, you know, to bring in these types of players. You think Dombrowski has the same mentality that the Red Sox had, say, in the late 90s when they were rivaling with the Yankees?
Well, the key when you look at farm systems is figuring out which guys, and I think this is the thing I've learned a lot covering baseball is you really need to be able to scout your own farm system well to be successful. And I think Dombrowski's done a good job of that. The guys that he's traded, I don't think are going to be the kind of players where you say, boy, the Chris Sale trade was a terrible mistake, or the Craig Kimbrel trade was a terrible mistake. He kept Devers, you know, he kept Betts, he kept Benintendi, he kept Eduardo Rodriguez. He's kept the guys that have turned out to be pretty good players. And there was a lot of action out there at one point for Mookie Betts and Andrew Benintendi, certainly. And there have been some, you know, obviously regretful trade. The Travis Shaw thing hasn't worked out very well. Thornburg hasn't even been able to pitch for the Red Sox. But I think for the most part, Dombrowski's done a good job of understanding who he could afford to part with, while at the same time keeping the guys that are turning out to be a good core group of players. And Cashman did the same thing. That there were, you know, he made some trades to get Aroldis Chapman and to get some other players, and so far those deals have worked out pretty well for him.
So let's talk a little bit about David Price. So he scratched from his start in Game 2 against the Yankees. It turns out he's got some carpal tunnel going on there, and then there's been some comparisons because he likes to play a lot of video games. You know, I guess what's going on with David Price and how important is tonight for him?
Well, yeah, I mean, I think every time he pitches, it's important. And obviously, when you're investing $30 million in a guy to play for you, you're expecting some good things. And it hasn't worked out overall. There's been some good moments. Certainly last year when he came back from his injury and pitched out of the bullpen, he was very important. His first season was a lot better than probably people give him credit for. But it's I think tonight it's really important because when you look at where they are in terms of, you know, they need a win. The road trip has kind of gone off the rails a little bit. They're coming off a bad loss. No, yeah, I would say a bad loss last night against the Blue Jays. They went to their bullpen. So they need Price to give them 6-7 good solid innings and kind of get them back on track. And this is why you pay a guy like that to pitch these kind of games.
What, thinking back again to that Yankees series, was there any sort of, like, was there any weakness that stuck out to you with the Red Sox that, you know, might be sort of an Achilles heel going forward?
Well, I think their bullpen, for sure. I think when you get past Kimbrel as a closer, I'm not sure who you can trust in that bullpen at this point. Mm. They've had some guys who have had given them some decent moments, but on the whole, you don't know who their eighth inning guy is because they've tried a couple different guys as the eighth inning guy, and none of them have really stuck. And there are some parts of that bullpen that I think can be part of a championship team, but I don't know that I don't know that if they were to get in the playoffs, the bullpen that they're going to take into the playoffs is the bullpen that they have right now. I think there's a lot of moving pieces. I think there's probably going to be some kind of trade to bring in some help, much like last year when they went out and got Addison Reed. So what this bullpen looks like in May is probably not what it's going to look like in September.
We are talking to Pete Abraham, Boston Globe Red Sox beat writer here on Sports Saturday on 101.3 ESPN and 101.3ESPN.com. You only have a couple minutes left. You tweeted during the game the other day that Mookie Betts, is he like part of royalty or something now? Is something going on with him and over on the other side of the pond?
Yeah, we did a story the other day. We found out that Mookie Betts is a distant relation to Meghan Markle, who's going to marry Prince Harry in a couple weeks. And talked to an amateur genealogist in the Boston area who had done the research and checked it out and found out that it was true. And I talked to Mookie's dad and talked to about him, about a couple of his relatives and kind of the connections that went back to Meghan Markle. And I went to Mookie with the information, and it turns out Mookie Betts, an American baseball player, doesn't pay a whole lot of attention to the royal family. Like, a big surprise. And so the first thing he said to me, well, is who's that? And I said, well, it's this actress who's going to marry the prince in England. And he's like, oh, which one? And I'm like, well, the one who's not married. And so he didn't really know too much about it. But then when the story came out, it kind of went viral for a couple days. And he got a kick out of it. He thought it was funny. And at the same time, the Red Sox are going over to England next year to play the Yankees.
Yeah.
So I guess theoretically he could meet his distant relative, who I guess at that point will be a duchess. So yeah. You never know. It could be a good photo op.
That's a great story, Pierre Pete. Thanks so much for taking the time. Enjoy your trip to Toronto, and we'll talk to you down the road.
All right, thanks for having me on, guys.
All right, Pete Abraham, Boston Globe. Interesting conversation there, and interesting about Mookie Betts.
That is funny.
I'll tell you the only problem with the Yankee Red Sox games for me. There's only because you know you as I'm a Yankee fan. You're a Sox.
Is it that ticking clock?
What do you mean ticking clock?
Tick, 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 tick.
No.
Takes forever.
No, it's not that. It's having to watch the games on Nesson. The fact that I have to listen to O'Brien and Remy just loving all over the Sox and hating all over the Yankees for 9 innings is just too much. I have to mute it. In fact, the game that they played the other day, because and the thing is, you see, I have the baseball package. I just want to watch it on Yes.
Yeah.
I want to hear my broadcasters. And I don't even think they're any good, but they're a lot better than those
Who's
guys.
Who's your boy, Michael Kay?
Michael Kay, Paul O'Neill, David. Oh, there's like 40 of them in that booth.
Paul O'Neill's still angry?
Paul O'Neill isn't angry. That's the problem. Yeah, I wish he was. The persona that Paul O'Neill had as a ball player into what he is on TV are two different things. He's like a goofy guy, funny guy on TV, like shucks. And as a player, he was like ready to run through a wall. It's like two different Paul O'Neills.
Or kick a ball he missed and then help the team out.
Yeah, exactly.
That clip is so good.
Yeah, but it's a good kick.
It was incredible. He was trying to do it.
He hit the cutoff, man. All right, we're gonna take a quick break. When we come back, we're talking Celtics. Man, those Celtics are hot, man. You gotta love these Boston. Even if you're not a fan of them, you gotta love them. We're gonna talk to Nick Gelso, Celtic blogger for SB Nation. Don't go anywhere.
Sports Saturday with Jeff Paul.
Our buddy Tom King, beat writer for the Patriots. Tom, how you doing?
And Bernie Saplicki.
Oh, so no Jeff Paul today. That's why I got this double secret CIA text message late at night during the week to ask me to come on from Aaron.
This is Sports Saturday with Jeff Paul and Bernie Saplicki on 101.3 ESPN.
Eastern Conference Finals are coming, buddy. The Boston Celtics and LeBron James. I mean, listen, if you're a Celtic fan, you want this, right?
Yeah.
Come get some.
It's what you were looking at the start of the season. It's just how you got there isn't what you expected.
And let's talk Celtics, because we got the best. We got Celtic blog writer for SB Nation, Nick Gelso, on the TikTok Jewish guest line. Nick, good morning, buddy.
Hey, man, how are you? Good to talk.
Hey, big, big weekend here, obviously. You got your Celtics and the Cleveland Cavaliers coming in. Obviously, the Celtics have gotten here. I mean, I'm not surprised they've gotten here, but I think for the NBA in general, with the injuries that they've had, it is kind of a surprise. Talk about the magic the Celtics are running right now.
Oh, my God. Talk about mental toughness, right? They're the opposite of what everybody is talking about with the Raptors. Adversity early on, I think, really helped this team. They gelled, and they've continued throughout the season, man down, it seems like every month, and here we are, Eastern Conference Finals again. You can't say there's a clear-cut star in this team. They're a team. They play together, and we're seeing the results.
How good has Brad Stevens been? I mean,
he's the MVP.
I mean, he's the MVP, and he doesn't...
But he's not coach of the year.
He's not coach of the year. I mean, I don't understand what is going on. See, this is my problem with the NBA. I mean, and this is why I wouldn't want it. This is why I was shocked that guys like Brad Stevens even leave college basketball. But he has proven that if you can get your players to buy in, that you can win. Coaching still does it. And there's only a handful of these guys in the league, and he's one of them.
Sure. Just go to Gordon Hayward's blog and see what he wrote yesterday. I mean, it kind of tells it all. You know, Stevens, he lets them play just enough to where, you know, they can make some mistakes, but it's not detrimental. He makes great adjustments. He's ahead of his opposing coach. And if there's one matchup in this series that's, you know, 100% in Boston's favor, it's a coaching matchup. So, you know, I can't say enough about the guy. And he doesn't care about Coach of the Year, although it annoys the hell out of me and you and everybody else who wants a fair and unbiased, award to go out. In this case, Stevens couldn't care less.
How does he not win it? Like, I don't get how he doesn't win it. I mean, what other coach out there?
Bureaucracy, like anything else. I mean, the real voting happens when the media votes and all that. But for one coach not to vote for him is just petty. And you know, the one who won got fired the next day. You know, so.
Yeah.
Yeah.
It's disgusting.
You know, the same thing happened to Derek Jeter, I think, in the early 2000s, where there was a writer that didn't like the Yankees and didn't vote for him. He ended up not winning the MVP in the year that he really deserved. It was the year that Justin Morneau won the MVP. And I remember that, too, thinking, like, how can someone not vote for this guy? You know, when he's clearly the MVP. Brad Stevens should be the coach of the year. He should be the cover boy for coaches in the NBA, period.
Yeah, I mean, I think that it's arguable now if he's kind of surpassed Popovich even. I mean, what he's done with these Celtics teams the last... I mean, you look at it. Ainge blew up the team. They only missed the playoffs 1 year.
That's right.
I mean, come on. Come on. That's, you think that that's not Brad Stevens? Of course it is. You see players time and time again come into Boston, excel, get traded or lost in free agency, and they don't play nearly as well on their new team. And there's a reason for that. You know, I can't say enough about him as a coach, and he's a hell of a nice guy, too.
The Celtics, they did knock off Cleveland once during the regular season there. Do you think they have what it takes to you know, unseat LeBron and those guys this time?
I mean, it's a clean canvas, right? Because you look at last year, it's two totally different teams. The one thing that's going in Boston's benefit this year is there's no Kyrie on the floor. And I know that sounds weird, but he's not playing in a Cavs uniform either. So one MVP candidate out of the lineup, naturally we're all wanting him to be playing for Boston. But right now, you know, they're excelling without him. So... you know, the rosters, it's a clean canvas. So if Boston can, you know, defend LeBron by committee, they have four or five players that can really, you know, try their best to slow him down. Get into, once you remove LeBron and Smith and Love, and Smith and Love are arguable, but basically you just have the Lakers, the bottom-dwelling Lakers, because LeBron blew up the team midway through the season. So do the Celtics have a chance? Of course they do. I think, you know, the further you go in a series, the more Brad Stevens has the ability to break down film and make adjustments. I just think it's absolutely crucial that they win one in Boston in these next first two games. And then, you know, home court plays a huge, huge role in this series. And people said the same thing about the Raptors, and I said it too. But this is a different ball team, coached by a different coach and playing in a different building in a different city. And those fans in Boston can really, really elevate the younger guys to higher status, higher level play, like you've seen in the Bucks and Sixers series. And they can also really, really diminish the younger guys on the Cleveland squad, which, you know, you get LeBron trying to do everything, you have a better chance than when LeBron is doing most of everything and also getting his teammates involved.
Yeah, I think the Celtics are going to win this in five, to be honest with you. I really
do.
You
gotta be kidding.
And I'm going to tell you why I think this. I think the Celtics have a mindset, and I don't think nothing intimidates them. I think the Celtics, if look what they did to Philadelphia. I mean, if there is a more talented group of athletes on the floor in anybody in the East, it's the Philadelphia 76ers. They're big, they're athletic, they're talented, and look what they did to the Sixers. I mean, LeBron's going to get his, but the rest of that team isn't going to do anything at Celtics. I'm telling you right now. I mean, I would not be surprised if Celtics did this in five games.
Hold on,
let me ask you a question. It's bold today.
Studio just got hot.
Ooh. But when I say it's bold today, but if you said this, if I said this to you three, you know, a month ago, you'd say, yeah, there's no question with the way Cleveland played. The reality here is that Cleveland played a very average Indiana team. Okay, and he played great in that. And then they played a team that he was mentally not prepared to play LeBron in Toronto. And as soon as that first game happened, it was over. The Celtics are a mentally strong basketball team. They're going to win this in five or six games. I'm telling you right now.
Wow, I love the take. I could tell you that, you know, I was there in 2010 when LeBron ripped off his jersey after game six. The Celtics had no business winning that series. And I could see it's a very similar scenario now where all season long he's threatening to leave, and, you know, it comes down to, will that locker room fracture? Can the Celtics' mental toughness create divides in that locker room? We've seen it happen before. Granted, it was many years ago on a much younger LeBron. That's really the hope, because if this series goes seven and LeBron James is on the other side of the court, I think you have to say, even at TD Garden, you have to say it's LeBron's game. So I'm with you there. I mean, if they could get that kind of an advantage where five or even six games, because they are tough enough to win in the queue, Yeah, man. I mean, I can see anything's possible. Not to harken back to KG, but anything is possible.
There was some talk earlier, and I don't know, maybe a month ago, about Hayward potentially coming back. Now it's gone completely dark. Are we like, yeah, is there going to be some secret, you know, the door's going to open, he's going to come running out?
No, I honestly, that's not going to happen. I mean, I really don't see why, even if they made the NBA Finals, I don't see why you would reintroduce Gordon Hayward other than to keep him on the bench as a decoy. You know, I mean, why do it? And that's the beauty of this, guys. Remember last summer, we all sat around, you know, biting our nails. Is Gordon going to come to Boston? What's going to happen with Isaiah? This summer, we can all sit back and say, our squad's getting healthy. They made the Eastern Conference Finals, potentially the NBA Finals. Maybe if the basketball gods are kind, maybe the NBA champions. And you have an offseason coming up where you're getting, you know, potentially the best point guard in the NBA and the top 3-5 definitely back healthy, and you're getting a all-star who has the potential to be a superstar at the 3, and then you have Tatum and Brown who have completely, I mean, look at what they have done. I mean, Jason Tatum, I've not seen a rookie perform in the clutch like this. I don't know that I've ever since I've been covering basketball.
Was that the most demoralizing thing for Philly in this past week, watching Tatum do what he did when the Philly's own number one pick didn't even get out there?
I mean, I hate to be the guy who's, you know, pushing back to the crowd, but you saw the Celtics just elevate at the Garden, and you saw the Sixers, particularly Simmons, just kind of shrink. The pressure definitely got to him, whereas, you know, 79 games starting on a competitive team for Tatum, and then 10, 7, 8, I don't even know what it is now, consecutive 20-point games, he's leaps and bounds ahead of Simmons, and then you're forgetting, you know, Fultz is sitting on the bench, never even got up once in the series.
Right.
So, yeah, I mean, it's almost like the Brad Stevens Coach of the Year thing. How can Ben Simmons, we don't know yet, but how could Ben Simmons even be in that conversation?
And I think,
he's not even a rookie.
And I think we have to give a little break to Simmons here. And obviously with Philadelphia, I think Philadelphia is still an up-and-coming team. I mean, they're a team that kind of surprised this season. And I think there were some, you know, because of the winning streak that they had late in the year, I think there was some expectation. But this is going to be a very formidable team going forward.
There's no question. I mean, I am quoted somewhere saying, you know, it was the best 4-1 series I ever witnessed. We covered the road games and the home games, and every single game was competitive for the most part. And just Philadelphia, the future there is just so exciting, especially being in the Atlantic Division. And that storyline of that rivalry goes back to the 60s. I mean, that's fun basketball. That's when the NBA is really fun, when the Celtics, the Sixers, even the Lakers are at the top of their conferences, and the Lakers have a ways to go, obviously, but you know that's when the NBA is at its best.
All right, Nick, we got like a minute left. What's your prediction?
Oh man, why are you doing this to me? I'm not going to say Celtics.
Hey man, I just said Celts in five. You, I mean, come on, I'm the one that lives here.
I'll say Celtics in six. I think they could close it out in the queue and shock the Cavaliers. How about that?
You're the man, Nick. We'll call you. Listen, you and I are going to talk again like in a couple of weeks. All right.
Yeah, sounds good, man. You know where to get me anytime. You got my number.
All right, Pat. We'll talk to you soon.
Thanks, fellas. Bye-bye.
Celtic blogger for SB Nation, Nick Gelso. Interesting conversation with Nick, huh?
He thought you were loco.
Oh, I might be. I might be loco. But again, like, I also like him because he's got some passion. He definitely loves the Celtics. You can tell that. You know, I like guys that write for people in there. You know, he's all in. But I believe it. I truly believe this. I mean, this is a basketball team in Cleveland that is so dominated by LeBron James that if he comes out of it at all, if they have the ability to kind of shut him down at all and nobody else steps up for Cleveland, they melt down. Yeah. And this is a Celtic basketball team that's deep, athletic, well-coached, and ready. This is not Indiana. This is not Toronto. And I don't care that they had 59 wins, the Raptors, and obviously they just fired Dwayne Casey. It's a sad situation for Casey. But this is an Eastern Conference that's weak. Yeah. And I mean, it's weak. And the fact that LeBron's there, good for him. He's a good player. But I'm telling you right now, the Celtic team has got a shot.
Yeah. I
should say they have a shot. I think they're going to win.
You think they have a very good shot.
I think I should say this. I think Cleveland has a shot to win. I think the Celtics should be very heavily favored.
I'm thinking about it. And like, what wrinkle can Stevens come up with to minimize LeBron can do.
I will say this. I mean, I don't know if you stop LeBron James.
You're not going to stop him.
But
no.
I didn't know if anybody could stop Joel Embiid either. And he did a hell of a job stopping him. I mean, Embiid got his points here and there, but he basically limited him. When games were on the line, they made those defensive stops. And I'm just saying, I mean, Cleveland's secondary players will have to play insanely well outside of what they are now for them to beat the Celtics. I just can't imagine this Cleveland team going in and beating this Celtic team with the level that the Celtics are on and the way they just know how to win.
Yeah.
They just know how to win basketball games.
Jeff.
Yes.
Celtics in four.
Anything's possible.
Hey, listen. I mean, I don't know about that, but why not? Who knows? I mean, Celtics go back to Cleveland 4-0. Who knows? But I think it's a Celtics series to lose, Austin. I truly believe that.
Okay.
All right, let's take a break. Take a shower.
Good tunes on the way out here.
I mean, this room is like, I always say it, you know, it's hot. It's menopause room.
Oh, yeah.
You know, one minute it's 95, and now it's like either they're taunted. And it might be, you know, Mike Czarny, who works, you know, for Star 92, and he's a Ghostbuster.
You think he's out there?
Well, either that or maybe you have to call him to come in here and, like, do an exorcism or something. Because every time I'm in here, I'm hot, I'm cold, I don't know what's going on.
When we started that segment, it was, like, boiling.
Well, when you walked in this morning, you were like, oh, it's nice and comfortable in here. I said, wait 5 minutes.
Yeah.
Just wait 5 minutes. All right, we're going to take a quick break. When we come back, let's talk some LeBron James. Me and you.
Okay.
All right. We'll talk a little LeBron James. We'll be right back.
Sports Saturday with Jeff Paul.
Bernie Siplicki is out this week.
And Bernie Siplicki. This is Sports Saturday with Jeff Paul and Bernie Siplicki on 101.3 ESPN.
Aaron, he's loving it. Look at him over here dancing. He's got the hair. Look at the flow, though. He's got good.
Kids spitting some fire jams here for the bumper tunes.
And you got some good cabbage up there, man. I don't know why you're covering it up with that hat. If I had a cabbage like that, I would never wear a hat.
That's how I get it to flow back like this. You got any
product in there?
No, man. No. It doesn't work. It's like a diamond. You got to press it. You got to press the coal and make this diamond happen.
Oh, is that how it works? Okay.
Yeah.
All right. I've never said no one's ever compared my hair to a diamond ever in my life.
It is shiny, though.
Oh, my God. Freshly done. I got a fresh blade today.
Oh, wow.
Brand new Mach 3, 4, 10, whatever those things are called. I go, great stuff.
It's crisp.
I appreciate you saying that.
You let Monica go to town on it?
Nah, dude. I do it myself. Nobody touches this. This is me. This is all me. You see the fade I have going on here? That's a lie. I've never had a fade in my life either. All right, so LeBron James has led his team, and you got to give him credit, the Cleveland Cavaliers, through Indianapolis, an Indiana team that was definitely game. Took them the whole series to get there. I don't think it was seven games. It was five games, right? That's a five-game series, the first round. Am I correct in that?
That was a seven game.
The Pacers and the Cleveland Cavaliers, they played seven or five games? Seven game?
That's a good question.
I can't remember. Anyway, it went the distance, okay? And Cleveland ended up winning the series. Great job. They go on to play the number one seed, all right? The Raptors, 59 wins.
Yes.
A team that I think...
You're right there.
Thank you very much. I think a team that the... And actually, no, it had to be seven games.
They won four games. What's wrong with me?
I'm thinking seven. Baseball. There
a
you
four,
go.
4-3.
All right, well, there you go. All right? I made a mistake. I own it. Seven games.
And we move on.
And we moved on. So anyway, the point being here is that you got to give him a lot of credit. He's basically single-handedly taken his team on his back and carried them to this Eastern Conference Championship and potentially, you know, another championship berth for LeBron James. What's he been to, like 30 straight? I mean, he goes to a lot of these things. But everybody now on social media, and Bernie and I debate this all the time, you know, is on the LeBron's better than Michael thing.
Mm.
And please stop it. Get some help. Stop it. Okay, I mean, he's just not Michael Jordan. That's not to displace LeBron James as one of the greatest of all time to play the game.
Yeah.
Like, I mean, I think, he, you know, especially of this era, he definitely is the greatest of this era. I would never say that he's not one of the great top 10 players in the history of the game. He brings a dynamic that most people haven't seen because of his size and his strength. But he's just not Michael Jordan. I mean, Michael Jordan never lost a final. And if he didn't go play baseball, Michael Jordan probably would have won two or three more championships. And the numbers that he would have had would have been insane. And not only that, he played in an era where basketball was much more physical than it is now.
Oh, it was
Yeah, I mean,
black and blue.
Oh, it was. I mean, the Detroit Pistons are a perfect example of that. I mean, they were a team that was built around being black and blue. That's how they won their championships. The Bad Boys.
Bad Boys.
With Rick Mahorn. Nice. Bill Laimbeer. I mean, those are bad teams, you know? Those are just big physical teams. And everybody had those teams. And now we kind of are in an era of the NBA where it's all about scoring. There is no defense. I mean, it was something to be named Defensive Player of the Year in the late 90s, late 80s, and in the mid 80s. And I would even compare even the great Celtic teams. Like, I don't even know if LeBron, I mean, I know LeBron James is probably a much better athlete than Larry Bird. But what Larry Bird brought to the table.
You can take the probably out. He is.
But when you put the two players together, what Larry Bird did, I think almost exceeds the talent of LeBron James to me, just because of the eras. I mean, these guys had to play through so many different obstacles. And LeBron James's strength is an attribute now because you can't defend him, because if you defend him, you foul him. It's really that simple. And I get a lot of smack on social media, and I have people that I know that love LeBron James and love what he does, but it's hard for me to me he's the most polarizing elite superstar in the history of the NBA.
To have never done anything wrong too. It's not like there's a character flaw or like a social issue that you can hold against him or lord over him or like, I mean, MJ had his like famous gambling thing and like,
yeah, but that's not against the law. I mean, he didn't do anything.
Some states it is, but yeah.
Well, okay, I know, but LeBron James wasn't. I mean, Michael Jordan wasn't gambling like with somebody's grandmother in the back of a Burlington. You know, I mean, he was in casinos or he played
or on planes
or on planes. Whatever. Oh, come on.
Yeah.
No. Please spare me that. I get so defensive of Michael. He's my guy.
And I'm a Michael guy too, but I'm trying to think about this a little differently. You can make the case that Michael, you know. Now the rules, you know, they're softer for everybody.
Yes.
For Michael, there were the Jordan rules. Like, he got calls that nobody else got. Fact. You know that.
In what way do you mean?
He would.
All superstars get calls.
Contact on him.
All like, superstars get calls.
LeBron
gets calls. They all get calls.
I missed school to watch Jordan growing up.
Yeah.
But the push off on Brian Russell at the end of the last game he played with the Bulls.
Yeah.
That's probably not a call they make on it. But
you're nitpicking.
I'm just saying, like, if you're going to say the league is softer in calls right now, I won't disagree with that. But I will say the idea that there was a star system, and it's not just an idea, it's a fact.
Sure.
Like, stars got calls more than everybody else. But it was pretty egregious back when they didn't call a lot of stuff.
802-655-6672 is the number to call if you want to join our conversation here on Sports Saturday. 802-655-6672. Who's better, LeBron or Michael? I mean, there's no sense calling because I'm going to tell you it's Michael. Okay, I'm just saying. And again, I see what you're saying, and I'm not saying, and again, you're right. Like, LeBron's done nothing wrong. He's a great family man. You know, stands up for what he believes in. You know, he seems to be a character guy. I have no problem with LeBron James as a person. It has nothing
That's why it's crazy. He's so polarizing.
But he's polarizing because what he does. I mean, he's basically, I make this cliche, I say it every time we talk about LeBron James. He's Taco Bell. You loved when you first get Taco Bell. You can't wait, right? Get the 3 chicken taco. You know what I mean? A little hot sauce on it.
Yeah.
You love it. But you know about at the end of it, you know, when it's over, you're not going to love it. It's going to get ugly. And that's what it's happening in Cleveland right now. If they don't, he's going to walk next year. And he's going to go to the highest bidder who he thinks can help him win a championship.
Yeah.
He did the same thing. I loved LeBron James when he was the young LeBron James before he took his talents to Miami.
That's the worst thing he's done. Yeah.
The LeBron, but he keeps doing it. What do you mean the worst thing he's done? He did it to Cleveland the first time. Hold on. He did it to Cleveland the first time, went to Miami. As soon as that started to fall apart, he goes back to Cleveland. Okay, good for him. He goes back. He starts to build the team up. He destroys the head coach that was there. He didn't like the head coach. He's the one that runs the Cleveland Cavaliers. If LeBron's not happy, people get traded. They get let go, bring a new coach in. That's why he's polarizing. And that's what Michael, and again, I know there are things that Michael did behind the scenes. I mean, he got in a fist fight with Steve Kerr.
Oh, yeah.
I know he did Tony Kukoc at times. I mean, he definitely is a tough teammate, but Michael Jordan never publicly would go out and shame anybody. And Michael Jordan never demanded a coaching change or I mean, at least that of my knowledge, it just never was out there. I mean, the team was built around him. He made all his teammates better. He made the Chicago Bulls the entity that it was. And that's what LeBron James had a chance to with Cleveland. And here's LeBron James now, still the best player in the league. Still, bar none, the best player in the league.
Yeah.
And why can't he just stay in Cleveland and have a team and continue to do what he's doing? Even if he's not going to win another championship, even though that's what you play for is to win championships. But you build it in Cleveland, and you just try to finish this thing in Cleveland. How great would this story be if LeBron didn't do what he's been doing in terms of, you know, leaving teams and leaving teams when they're kind of like at the bottom and kind of destroying teams as they go. And now what's he going to do to Cleveland when he leaves? He's going to destroy this organization again.
He's only, you're holding him guilty for future actions that have not come to pass.
Well, it looks like it's going to come. Okay, you're right. Okay, fair enough. But I mean, but I just look at the things that have happened in the past and I just expect it to happen again. Maybe he won't leave Cleveland, but I'll tell you right now, if Cleveland doesn't make some adjustments in terms of personnel, he's going to leave.
Yeah.
Okay, and what other superstar did that? What other superstar has ever done that?
I think it's totally a toss. Well, there's a lot that goes into that. I think, yeah, he is a product of this day and age where that, you know, is more common. But
it doesn't have to. It's not. Hold on a minute, Austin. It's not common for an athlete like LeBron James. LeBron James is not. There's not another athlete out in this league, in this world right now, like LeBron James.
Yeah.
There's a few players, okay? Magic, Larry, Michael, LeBron, Kareem. You know, there's like 10 names you're going to throw out there that are the greatest of all time. You don't see players like that jumping around. You just don't. And with LeBron James, you do. When LeBron James goes to the Hall of Fame, what jersey is he going to wear? What jersey should he wear?
At this point, Cleveland, yeah.
There'd be an argument that maybe he should do Miami. That's where he won his first championship.
It's his hometown. He's played more there.
But there could be a debate to that because who knows? I mean, I guess what I'm saying to you is that he's the only superstar athlete, elite athlete, like the Tiger Woods type athlete, the Babe Ruth type athlete, the Michael Jordan type athlete, the LeBron James type athlete that's jumping from ship to ship.
A-Rod?
A-Rod's not LeBron James. A-Rod is not going to have numbers-wise, in terms of where his stature is, in terms of the baseball world, that LeBron James is doing in the NBA. They're not the same athlete. I mean, A-Rod is an amazing athlete, one of the top players, but not LeBron James in terms of his stature in the game.
Before A-Rod accrued all this baggage, you know, the last 10, 15 years, you wouldn't have said that he isn't the same type of athlete because he was the next big thing with the Mariners. He left for the huge deal with Texas.
Yep.
Then left Texas to jump ship to go to the Yankees, which anytime anybody goes to the Yankees, you go to do one thing.
Yeah, I agree, but I don't look at A-Rod as his athletic ability as LeBron James. I just don't. I think that there were players out
for
there.
For the sport of baseball, A-Rod was as athletic as anybody to play in his era.
Great player, no question about it. One of the big players of the era, but not the player of the era.
Ken Griffey jumped.
Okay, I mean, I don't know if you can compare baseball and basketball, though, like that. I just don't look at it that way. I mean, yeah, Ken Griffey jumped late. Not in the middle of his prime.
It was actually like mid-career.
It was late career. He finished in Cincinnati. He did his time in Seattle. He was at the other end when they let him go, when he left. And I would say, A-Rod, I guess we could argue, is A-Rod and LeBron at the same level in terms of persona, maybe personality-wise, but I think there were players in baseball that could compete with A-Rod. There's nobody in basketball that can compete with LeBron. Nobody. In basketball, you build organizations around players like those guys. We have to take a break.
Do we?
I can do this all day with you.
I can tell.
I love my Michael Jordan. I love them. All right, take a quick break. When we come back, it's Out in Left Field segment, and this is a good one, a real good one. And it's a public service message, too, if you're driving south this weekend. We'll be right back.
Want to hear something weird? It's Out in Left Field on Sports Saturday, only on 101.3 ESPN.
I could do this debate on who's better all day. I could just do this all day. But we're going to end that. Because you know what that music means. Do you know what this music means?
Oh, yeah. I've been here for this.
Oh, yeah. Okay. So, all right. What do we got today, my man?
All right. Out in left field, Bigfoot is in New Jersey.
What?
The legendary, okay, fictitious, Bigfoot was allegedly spotted in South Jersey's densely wooded pine barrens, adding to the dozens of sightings in the Garden State since the 1960s, according to a group that logs credible accounts of the big, hairy, bipedal creature. In a split second, I saw something brown on two legs about 6 feet tall sprint past the car, writes breathless eyewitness Trisha.
Crazy.
In the latest sighting logged by the Bigfoot Field Research Organization, which tracks the hirsute hallucination globally, the Asbury Park Press reported.
That's a lot of words.
I caught it in my rearview mirror, wrote Trisha of the creature. She said she spied on an overcast April 7 as she drove with her husband and dog near Brown Mills in Ocean Country.
Keep that dog close to you because those things, I think the big feet like to grab. the dog. You know what I mean?
I thought Bigfoot hung out in Whitehall, New York.
Well, that's true. There's stories about that. Listen, I believe in Bigfoot. I'm telling you, I watch all those TV shows on America and on A&E and all those TV shows, those Finding Bigfoot and looking for Bigfoot, all that stuff. And let me tell you this quick story. I've got a delivery guy that for Ramontos that comes every week. He comes every Friday. He drives up at like 4 o'clock in the morning. And he came in one morning and he was as white as your coffee cup is. And I said, Joe, what's happening? He goes, I can't tell you. He goes, I you'll think I'm crazy. He goes, I go, just tell me, it's okay. And he goes, I was just coming up 93, like 2 hours ago, and I saw a shadow. So I slowed down thinking a deer was going to run out. And there was an 8-foot Bigfoot standing on the side of the road. He said it was so high. So Joe delivers my the food in this huge truck. So he's sitting like 8-9 feet up. He said he slowed down so much that when he got next, like he drove up next to me, looked to the right, it was looking at him in the eye. He's sitting up in his truck. He said, I saw it clear as day. He goes, hands, arms down past its knees. Harry just watched me drive by. I hit the gas, but you know, the trucks don't go fast when, you know, he's just trying to get by. I said, I mean, listen, they're on 93. They're right down the road.
Really?
I'm just saying. That's what he told me. I've been trying to get him on the radio show every Halloween so I can tell this story, but it's a true story. He's out there, buddy. Bigfoot's out there. So I'm just saying, like, put your dogs on a leash when it's late at night, and if you hear something weird, get in the house. I'm just saying.
Okay.
Are you shocked by that or what? That's a true story.
A little bit.
He was heeking. He's like, I know you're going to think I'm crazy, but I have to get this off my chest. I mean, this is what I just saw. I said, I don't think you're crazy. I believe you. So now I don't slow down on the highway. If I see some shadow, I'm changing lanes and I'm just, you know, gone. I'm shooting it.
Not as scary, but swear on my life, I saw a mountain lion in Shaftesbury, Vermont.
I'm not surprised. A catamount?
Yeah.
No kidding.
Which are not supposed to exist in Vermont, not for decades.
My God. We are out in left field right now. Where were you, playing golf?
No, it was driving about 10:30 at night, Route 7, that big stretch that goes up to that where it has a sign for like highest point on Route 7.
Oh, yeah.
Right before that, on the and I do this road 5-6 times a week. It wasn't a rock and it wasn't a bobcat because I've seen bobcats. Bobcats look like, you know, mangy house cats. This thing was bigger than the biggest dog you've seen, and it was long like a catamount would be. Like, it looked like the statue at UVM.
Unbelievable.
But with hair, and I was like, oh my God.
Oh, it's out there, buddy.
Yeah.
Out there. Good one this week, buddy.
Thank you.
Do your Sports Center.
Sports Saturday with Jeff Paul.
I mean, I'm not as tall and I don't have the hair and I'm not good looking, but I mean, other than that, I mean, you know, Tom Brady and I are a lot alike.
And Bernie Siplicki.
No.
This is Sports Saturday with Jeff Paul and Bernie Siplicki on 101.3 ESPN.
Good morning. It is Sports Saturday here on 101.3 ESPN and 101.3ESPN.com. Good to be back. Bernie is out today, so filling in is award-winning, all-everything, soccer jersey-wearing, Washington Capitol fan-loving, Austin Danforth with us today. You must be fired up, man. Your Celtics, your Red Sox, your Caps.
Yeah.
I mean, what else? I mean, life is good.
Pretty good. I got to play golf recently, so.
I did. So, by the way, anyone that knows Austin on Facebook, he had the old slow-motion golf swing. You know, just to make, show off how talented he is on the links. This morning I saw that. Very impressive. I like the backswing, as I said earlier. Your finish looked good.
And now I got, you know, coaches from all over the place.
Oh, yeah.
I got, Jeff Paul left a comment. One Stan Williams has left a couple comments.
Yeah.
We got basketball coach Paul Pecor weighed
in. We're all impressed.
And then
we're all
boys impressed. Basketball coach Jeff Davis is making cracks about how white my legs are. He thought they were out of bounds steaks. I'll take a little offense to that because I saw him in shorts at Colchester the other day. He's pretty pasty himself.
Yeah. Well, everybody likes it, man. I mean, it's impressive. I mean, you know, it really is. Your tempos, I mean, especially for being this early in the season and what a horrible spring we had. You're like mid-season form.
Well, I got to watch like Instagram videos of my friends Evan Russell and Casey Comline who have like textbook, like unbelievably perfect swings.
Yeah.
You don't have to put them in slow motion to think, oh, wow, those are good.
You have a very interesting take on spring sports. You mentioned you saw Jeff Davis, I'm assuming, at a spring sports game.
I did.
I'm assuming. And so interesting stuff here. So we actually, you know, I think our phone is ringing, so I think we have our next guest. We'll get into that in a second.
Okay.
So I don't know, the Josh Pallotta Fund. an amazing organization. Valerie Pallotta has started this. Her son, a Colchester High School graduate, National Guard soldier, PTSD, unfortunately took his life because of that. She started the Josh Pallotta Fund. She has done so much work for PTSD patients in Vermont. And today is their fourth annual Josh Pallotta Fund hockey tournament. What an amazing, it's fourth annual. Now, I've known Valerie for a little while. So the fact that this is 4 years old now is crazy. We got her right now. Valerie, are you there?
I am on. Hi, guys.
Good morning. Thanks so much for taking the time with us this morning.
No, thanks for having us on, but you got to stop talking about the Capitals.
If you knew Austin, you know, he is such a jaded Caps fan, so he's fired up. You got to give him some props. The Caps usually blow it, you know what I mean?
I'm just a little depressed today because my Predators lost, and, you know, I'm just, you know, kind of down. So hearing about the Capitals, it just kind of hurts my heart.
I do like your team, and you guys had a great run last year as well. So, I mean, a lot to be happy about there as well.
Yeah, that was awesome.
Valerie,
good luck to you.
Thank you.
Oh, that isn't that nice. Look at the hockey love in here. So aren't hockey fans supposed to be like you punch each other in the face and you throw the jersey over the head? And, I mean, you guys are in there. Good luck to you. You know, you have an up-and-coming team. This is much different than I'm used to.
It is. You punch each other and then you kiss each other.
Yeah, that's how it works.
You say sorry and then move on. Yeah.
Well, speaking about hockey tournaments, you have your fourth annual Josh Pallotta Fund hockey tournament today at Carnes Arena. Let's talk about that event.
Sure. So Josh grew up playing hockey, and he played with a couple of, you know, great teams and played for Baja for a while. And after he died, one of his buddies who he played with, Jordan Carpenter, wanted to do something to give back. And he didn't really know what to do. He didn't want to just throw money at the fund. And, you know, he wanted to do something that could repeat every year. So he said, hey, you know, I played hockey with Josh. Let's do a hockey tournament. So it's really grown. The first year we had probably six teams, I think. And this year we have 119 people playing. We're so lucky to have some UVM alumni, some National Guard team, our Guard members. We've got Rosie's Tavern. We've got some area high school teams and alumni. So we're really excited. We've got Aaron Miller is playing, and I'm just so overjoyed that he's coming. He was Josh's favorite player growing up, and it's just really cool that he's coming out to support the fund.
I think it just says so much about what you've created here, Valerie, for this Josh Pallotta Fund. Your son, obviously an American hero, and the PTSD epidemic that we do have in this country for our soldiers is so high. Talk about what you guys are doing to try to combat that.
Sure. So, and just so your listeners are aware, PTSD is really prevalent among even non-veterans.
Right.
It's just really, really high, the percentage of people who suffer from it and struggle with it. And what we did was we really wanted to do something to give back to our veterans. And after talking to Josh's buddies, the guys he served with, friends, they really wanted to have a place that they could go and hang out and be together and just play video games. So between that idea and then the research that's come out supporting veterans with complementary and alternative therapies like aromatherapy, acupuncture, Reiki, chiropractic, and things like that, we thought we would combine the wellness piece and the recreational piece and create a wellness rec center for veterans. We're finding that it's really expensive to do that. It's probably going to cost us about $1 million to open this facility up. So in the meantime, we are rolling out what's called a wellness hub, where we hope to match up practitioners doing these types of healing modalities with veterans so that they can start receiving these services now and not have to wait until the Wellness Rec Center opens its doors.
So talk about what fans... So today, the event starts today at Carnes Arena, correct? What time does everything start off?
They start at noon. The first game starts at noon. We have both rinks. We are going from noon to 6, and then we're having the after party at the poorhouse. I'm sitting in the parking lot right now, and the guys are coming in with their equipment, and they're getting all set up. And, you know, just stop by. You don't have to be there the whole day. We've got some great food that people have donated, and just come on out and watch some hockey. There's no refs. There's no trophies. It's just good old-fashioned kind of pond hockey style hockey.
And I know that Rosie's team is really good, Austin. I mean,
are
Rosie,
they?
Oh yeah, Jamie.
They got
Rosie's
some ringers.
Team, oh yeah, they're the real deal. They play all over the world. I shouldn't say the world, but all over the country. At least I know that. They were just playing in Florida a couple weeks ago,
I think. Big travel budget?
Oh, yeah, they're a big... Oh, well, of course, it's Rozzy's team. You know, it's a very big deal. Very big deal. You said Andrew Miller's going to be there today. I mean, talk about how exciting...
Aaron Miller.
I apologize. Tell me, that's got to be... Okay. That's a big deal.
That's a big deal. So Aaron played for UVM, and he also went on to play for the NHL. He played for the Colorado Avalanche, the Los Angeles Kings. He also was in the U.S. Olympic team when they won silver in 2002. So, and he's one of the co-owners of Buffalo Wild Wings. So, you know, he's out doing a lot for the community. They're actually doing a golf tournament for us in September for Blue Star Mothers of Vermont and the Josh Pallotta Fund. So we're really excited about that. You know, it's all these little things. It's you know, if you don't have the money to donate, if you own an organization or a business, think about doing a fundraiser or sponsoring our tournament. We have Raise, Tool, and Die up in northern Vermont that sponsored this tournament for us. So it's, you know, we've got a lot of great support. And it's the little things. It's, you know, doing a Memorial Day Murph workout of the day at 802 CrossFit or a run, you know, just the little things like that that really do a lot to support our veterans.
What's your favorite part about the event today coming up?
I think it's my favorite part is just seeing all of these hockey players come out of there and say, that was so much fun. That was the best fun I've had in a long time. And that just makes me filled with joy. And knowing that people are coming out and remembering Josh and, you know, doing the thing that he loved so much, it just, they have a great time. And that's the best part. You know, it's a beautiful day out, but, you know, it's just one of those things where you just come and play a couple hours of hockey, and it just amazes me how much fun these guys are having.
Valerie, we really appreciate your time. And you know what? Let's this week talk, because let's come up with a pizza for Josh, and we'll give part of the proceeds of that pizza at Ramonto's. We'll give part of the proceeds to whatever we sell that pizza to you, to this organization. You guys have your work with this and what you've done has really inspired a lot of people, including myself. So let's talk this week and see if we can come up with a Josh Pallotta pizza for Ramonto's. How's that sound?
Oh, that would be so awesome, Jeff. He loved his food. He was a big guy.
Yep.
He loved
his
food. And the guys he was deployed with used to call him a lot of Pallotta because he could put the food down. So maybe we'll have a lot of pizza.
Well, from one JP to another one, where I'm honored
That's
to share
right.
those. I'm honored to share those initials. And Valerie, keep doing the work you're doing. Let's talk this week, and good luck with this event. Thanks for taking the time today.
Thank you, guys. And you know what? I won't stop because it's what I got to do. It's what mom does, and I'm not going to stop until there's an end to veteran suicide. So, you know, thanks for having me on. I really appreciate it.
Happy Mother's Day, Valerie.
Thank you.
Thank you.
Have a great day. You know, you talk to somebody like Valerie Pallotta and you realize that, you know, you talk about strength. I mean, you know, her, you know, obviously her son was everything to her, and he went through a challenge with what he was dealing with what he saw and what he was dealing with, and ended up taking his life. And what she's done is she's taken his name and she's out there helping other people, and she's inspired so many people. I mean, I met Valerie a few years ago when she was just starting this, but what the Josh Pallotta Fund has turned into is for our community is very special, and she deserves all the credit for that. She's put a lot of work into it.
We need more people like her.
We do. There's no question about that. So check that out today at Carnes Arena. Starts at 12, goes till 6. It is nice out, but it's a little chilly. So what you do is you go watch some hockey for a couple hours,
yep.
And you go out and you enjoy the sun.
It's going to feel like 10, 15 degrees warmer by the time you get outside.
And the good news is when you walk out of the rink, it's going to be green and sunny, where usually when you walk out of the rink, it's gray and white, which I hate.
Then you could go to the poorhouse and celebrate responsibly.
Exactly. Exactly. That's a great segue, Austin. That's why you're an award-winning sports writer and I'm just a hack on the radio. So, hey, listen, you had interesting. We do have some time in this segment. I do want to get into it. Local high school sports is rolling now. Spring,
finally.
And you were on the show maybe 4 weeks ago, and we were talking about how slow spring sports was starting. I think at that point it was like 20 below zero. We had 6 inches of snow on the ground. And thinking to myself at the time, like, when are they going to play these games? And you know, you're working on an article. I don't know if I can let the cat out of the bag, but you may have some ideas on how to fix the spring season.
Yeah, it just seems like we run into the similar same problems every year with spring, and working on a column piece that can run in concert with something Alex Abrami's doing probably in the next few days here. But basically, like, you sit here and you watch. If you watch the same thing happen over and over, you think, well, how do you avoid this happening? And this year is the most drastic example of, you know, spring just being a mess.
Yeah.
And, you know, you get teams that, you know, why do we schedule games at all for the first week of April? It's Vermont. Like, if you're lucky, you can play games in Bennington in April.
Right.
Or you have a turf field and you can play lacrosse, you know, the first week or two of April. But you know, baseball, softball, even tennis, like tennis, you get a, that court gets wet, you can't play.
Right.
So anyway, like a couple things, you're trying to play too many games in too short a time. I went and saw the Colchester Mount Mansfield baseball game the other day. It was the third day in a row each team was playing, and they weren't done for the week. Mount Mansfield, they were playing in the middle of 6 games in 8 days. I think there's another team, 5 games in 7 days. And, you know, these kids are halfway through that week. I talked to a couple of them after the game. Their arms are sore. We're talking about a sport that implemented, and probably and for the right reasons, did a good thing with pitch count limits. But if you're playing shortstop,
yeah,
6 games in 8 days, your arm's going to get tired.
And I wonder how many college coaches that have either going to give these kids scholarships or are looking to bring in to help their teams, how the overusage that these kids are getting in like this. I mean, you wonder if that's a problem for them.
Right. And you get these kids, the other thing, I mean, spring, like technically actually starts mid-March when they do pitchers and catchers.
Mm-hmm.
But if you played baseball for Essex and you also played hockey for Essex, you missed not only pitchers and catchers, but the first day of actual like spring tryouts, because you were playing in your state championship game.
Now, we only have a couple minutes here, but doesn't in most, and I'm guessing this because I'm a soccer coach in the fall, so I know what happens, but during the spring break week, they don't play games, correct?
For most teams don't, and if they do, they do so grudgingly because they
most
know they
kids
don't
are on vacation.
Have, you know, the full complement of kids. So you might be looking at like, because
times have changed, man.
The North has their,
times have changed.
The North has vacation when the South doesn't,
right.
And the South has vacation the week before the North does. So if CVU has to go play Mount Anthony, they're doing so with, you know, 2/3 of a squad. They got to play with some JV guys.
What happened to commitment? Like, you're on a team, you don't go on vacation. I mean, you want to fix the problem. I think you just said it. You start the season 2 weeks, a little bit 2 weeks later, and you have those 2 weeks where you play.
What do we got?
My dad had tickets to a Patriots game, and I missed it to go to my football practice.
There you go. You get a gold star. Gold star. You
put it right here on my dedication.
You had a football. You have a football practice. Wait, you went to. You had a practice on a Sunday.
Monday night.
Monday night.
It was a Monday night game. You missed a Monday night game for practice. Good for you. You should. You're committed to your team. That's what you need. All right. We'll talk more about this later. Let's take a quick break. When we come back, hey man, we haven't even talked about baseball yet. I mean, the Yanks.
Well, not in like an hour.
About an hour. And you know that's a lot for me. The fact that I haven't said New York Yankees in an hour is a lot for me. Okay? I usually say Yankees.
I was expecting you in pinstripes today after this week.
My underwear.
I haven't said Giants in a while either.
Right, I know. Well, I've been out for 2 weeks. My buddies text me to get mad at me. I think they say Giants and Yankees way too much. But we're going to talk about everything when we come right back.
Sports Saturday with Jeff Paul.
Brown. Score points, Burns. Like, they're still scoring a lot of points.
Yeah, that's fine.
And to me, in the NBA, if you can score enough points, you can beat anybody.
And Bernie Siplicki.
Well, if you score enough points in any game, you're going to win.
This is Sports Saturday with Jeff Paul and Bernie Siplicki on 101.3 ESPN.
Big week for baseball. Big week for baseball around here.
Yeah.
And then most people around me, and I guess there's some Mets fans sprinkled in here too, but there's a lot of Yankee and Red Sox fans in Chittenden County and Burlington area.
The good thing about the Mets fans, they know their place in the pecking order.
Yeah, they do. They do.
Like, they're very, I think they've come to term with it.
Yeah, well, I mean, they're realists. I'll give them that. You know, like Jan, our buddy Jan, they catch you. Thanks to Jan for coming and covering for me a couple weeks ago when I was in Jamaica. But, you know, Jan is a great Mets fan. He, you know, even when they started out, I think the Mets started the season out really hot. The first 8-10 games, they were like 8-1, 9-1 or something like that. And he was very cautiously optimistic. But the Mets had a huge win last night. Big comeback win the night. They were down 1-0 in the ninth and came back to beat the Phillies, who were playing great baseball. But, you know, Yankees, Red Sox this past weekend. The Red Sox start the year out winning 17 out of 19 games. And then the Yankees right now are in the process of doing the exact same thing.
They're 18 out of 20 right now?
It's crazy with the, I think
17 out of 19?
17 out of 19 or 17 out of 20 or something.
Nuts.
So both teams going to have these huge roles. They seem to have separated themselves in the American League. And obviously we know what the Yankee-Red Sox rivalry means. But for the first time in a long time, I feel like this rivalry can be extended to every position on the field. Like a Red Sox fan can say,
how excited were you when Pete Abraham was saying what he said in the first hour?
Yeah, exactly. Right. I mean, that's what I mean. Like, there's, it's like, well, the Red Sox fan can say, well, we have Mookie Betts, and the Yankee fan will say, well, we have Judge, and the Red Sox fan will say, well, so what if you have Judge? You know, we have Chris Sale, and the Yankee fan will say, well, we have Luis Severino. Right. I mean, you can just do this all day. You know, the shortstops, Didi, and what's the shortstop name for the
Xander Bogaerts.
Xander Bogaerts. You know, I mean, they're just both teams are so. I mean, they've got mixes of very, very youthful players.
Yep.
Like guys like Devers. Yankees now have Torres, and they have Miguel Andujar. I think Miguel Andujar will be on the bench soon when they bring back Brandon Drury, who's the guy they traded for in the offseason. But just two very even teams. So you look at baseball right now and you think, wow, you know, we do still have a lot of home runs, but now we're getting some dominant pitching. And in this week on the huddle, Buster Olney was on, and he had this take.
However, where we are in the game today, it's a concern because, in my opinion, it's not as watchable. The pitching is becoming so ridiculously dominant, it's crazy. A couple of numbers. To your point about no-hitters, think about this. In 2017, there were 24 games in which a pitcher carried a no-hitter through six innings.
Wow.
Guys, we've had this year 22 already.
655-6672 if you want to join the conversation on, is baseball unwatchable? And I look, I love Buster Olney, and it's hard to argue with Buster Olney's brilliance in baseball especially, but I don't see that. I don't see a game that is unwatchable. I mean, I don't know where we've gotten to in the society now, sports society, where, you know, last year where, and obviously home runs are exciting and people love them and you know, you get your butts in the seats, but there's something also exciting about watching a pitcher dominate or watching a pitcher do really well, I mean, pitch well against dominant lineups.
Yeah.
There's so many compelling stories this year in baseball. And I'm not just talking Yankees, Red Sox, where that's going to be compelling all year if you're Sox or Yankee fans. But you look what's happening out in Anaheim with the Angels, and you got Ohtani, who's been, I mean, when's the last time besides Babe Ruth you had a dominant pitcher and a dominant hitter on the same, like, same positions, doing the same thing?
Yeah.
Doesn't happen.
No.
You've got teams like the Phillies that have come back to life. The NL East is going to be a war all year. You let the Nationals run away, but look what Atlanta's doing right now. You look at the AL, you got the Red Sox and the Yankees. You know, Cleveland's going to be a great team. You got the Houston Astros, who are a great team. To me, there's a lot of stories in baseball. So to say it's unwatchable, to me, this is for the first time in a long time, and I've always been a big baseball fan, Austin. I've always said, I hate new rules. If you don't like baseball, who cares? I don't care. Just don't watch it. Baseball's supposed to take a long time.
Yeah.
If I pay $50 for me to go watch a game, I don't want it to be over in an hour and a half. If it's a three-hour game, it's a three-hour game. It's the way it is. You know what I'm saying? Like, the new rules to speed the game up, I think it's worked. But I still think there's something about players stepping out on a pitcher and catchers going out to the pitcher. They're trying to slow down momentum. Like, I think that's part of the game.
Yeah.
But, I mean, to me right now, baseball is as compelling as it's ever been. I'm surprised that Buster Olney would say that.
I think he's probably, like, it always seems like baseball is going back and forth between we're not scoring enough. We're scoring too much.
Right.
We're not scoring enough. We're scoring. And every time, we're scoring too much. Game's taking too long. We're not scoring enough. Nobody's going to watch. It seems like they have, there's a pretty big identity crisis within the sport. And I think that concern is there because they can probably feel themselves almost becoming like what hockey is, where watched by hockey people. Baseball is watched by baseball people.
But you might say, but again, if your baseball team is successful, I mean, I don't buy that. I just don't think, I think hockey and baseball, I mean, I see what you're saying, that baseball people watch baseball and hockey people watch hockey, but it's just to do different games. Like, hockey has never really been the American sport. You know what I'm saying?
No, but what I'm getting at is I think the way, like, the American culture has moved away from baseball, and why there are all these concerns voiced is because the baseball market is shrinking into just baseball people.
Yeah, I have no numbers to say that if that's happening or not. I just know that it seems to me that if your team is successful, baseball fans come back. Like, fans come back. When you have a good story, people want to watch that.
Yeah.
So I understand where you can get complacent if you're a fan of a team and your team's not very good, you're not really paying attention. But I think you can say that about any sport. Like, for example, I'm a Giants fan. We all know it. I just said the word Giants, by the way. So our unbeaten streak of saying New York Giants in the show continues for another
day. We made it
day.
An hour and a
another
half.
Week. Exactly. But I'm a Giants fan. Last year when the Giants were 3-13, I had no interest in the NFL. If it wasn't for fantasy football, I'd have zero interest in the NFL. Now, when my team is successful, and I'm not only am I interested in what the Giants are doing, I'm interested in what everybody else is doing to see how that plays to affect the Giants. I think that's what happens in all sports. But for baseball, if your team's successful, you're going to watch. And I think if there's compelling stories, and in baseball, I think we have a lot of compelling stories. You know, I guess I don't understand. I think we have small groups of people that sit in a room and tell you what's wrong with baseball. So there's a handful of people that will say to you, it's too slow. We have to change this immediately. Or, you know, the pitching is too dominant. We got to do something to help the bat. The strike zone's got to get a lot, you know, smaller. That we got to help these batters get hit home more home runs. Instead of just letting the game be the game and letting it evolve, every major sport has gone through ebbs and flows based on personalities, talent.
I think this is an overreaction.
I agree.
It's a confluence of maybe they tweaked the ball a little bit. Pitchers are getting better, and it's a situation where over the last 10 years, the theory of hitting, it doesn't put the premium on putting the ball in play. If you strike out, you strike out.
Like, well, they definitely talked a lot about that now. I remember back when we were younger, they used to teach you, they used to want you to, you want to create the backspin on the ball, so you swing down on the baseball to create that topspin, not backspin, the topspin to get the hit line drives. Now they're teaching kids, you know, you want launch angles. You're looking for launch angles, hit the ball out. And whatever you're trying to do to be a ball player, that's fine. But it's like just everybody take a deep breath when it comes to baseball and just let it happen. If this is a year where there's like 7 or 8 or 10 dominant pitchers, or some young pitchers come up and they become the dominant ones, and it's more of a pitcher friendly league, I don't necessarily see all that. I mean, there's still a lot of home runs being kicked out of these ballparks. I mean, the ballparks keep getting smaller, so it's not like you know, it's hard to hit home runs. It's not like, you know, this is the old vet in Philadelphia here,
or the Polo Grounds,
or the Polo Grounds,
Lakerland, where you have 438 exactly. Deep center.
I know, Bernie. Come on, man. Like, you know, actually, I love that though. Lakerland. That's a good name for that. Lakerland. You got to hit it way out there, but. Long story short, sometimes you just want to say, leave the game alone. Like, just let it be what it's going to be and just trust your process. Baseball is always going to survive. It's never going to die. Just let it happen. I guess I've never watched baseball and thought, boy, this sucks, unless my team stinks.
Yeah, and I equated the Buster Olney's concern for the watchability of it with less people probably watching or it inclined to watch. I think that gets back into what they're taught, like the issue with baseball being the length of the season.
Yeah.
Like,
yeah.
I don't dislike baseball. I'm probably going to the Red Sox game on Monday with some buddies, but I'm just going to hang out with some buddies. I'm not going because I want to watch the baseball.
Right.
I just won't really pay attention to baseball a lot until September. I just don't. We're talking about 5 months of stuff that leads up to something matters.
But doesn't that make the game so special that it is long? It takes a long time. There's 162 games. I mean, there's something about that grind. And yes,
it makes it unique. It makes it special, but it doesn't make it must watch. It doesn't make it appointment viewing.
But again, that's the mentality that we have. It's got to have it right now. And then, because everybody loves the NFL and what the NFL is doing, and you know, it's a 16-game season, every game's so important. You compare those types of seasons to baseball, where it's more of a grind. Let's get a call on the line here. We've got we got Josh in Burlington. Good morning, Josh. What's happening, my man?
Good morning, guys. Thanks for your hard work. Really appreciate the show. And I agree with Jeff, like, let's pump the brakes on freaking out. The game is watchable, and I'm a very casual baseball fan, and I still will watch a game. But I think out of the major sports, baseball is the one where being at a major league game is so much better than watching it on television. And that's part of the problem with the viewing experience. It's just so much better to be there. The difference between watching it live or watching it on TV, I think, is a bigger contrast than the other major sports.
Josh, what's your number one sport?
Basketball.
Basketball. What's your Celtics? Your team?
Celtics. Yep.
You must be excited then, huh?
Celtics in four.
Very excited.
Well, we appreciate the call, my man, and I always appreciate when somebody agrees with me, because that doesn't happen very often on this show. So you get a gold star for that today. I appreciate that.
Thanks. Take care.
Have a great day. And I think he's right. I mean, and again, nothing is better than being there. Except I will say, going to NFL games, it's hard to follow NFL games. You know what I mean? Everything happens so quickly. Like, TV experience for football is much better than, I mean, it's always fun to go to a game, like tailgating and being there is fun. But watch, if you really do have to watch an intense game, like you want to sit and really watch it, going to a game is like, I mean, I can tell you how quickly Eli Manning throws interceptions when I'm a Giants fan. Like, I was at a game against Minnesota where he threw like 5 interceptions. And I've never seen anything so fast. I'm like, wait a minute. I'm looking at the receiver he's throwing to running down here. And meanwhile, the Minnesota guy's running the other direction. It's hard to follow it when you're live.
I went to my first NFL game last fall. I actually got to see the Patriots lose at home. But
attaboy. Were you at the Kansas City game?
No.
Oh, you were at the
Panthers.
Panther game, okay.
So, but like what caller was saying, I would agree that I think, you know, baseball is the best one to watch in person. Maybe aside from hockey, because you can't really always see the puck in either sport anyway, and the intensity of hockey is pretty tangible when you're in the building. But when you look at it like baseball, if baseball isn't as fun to watch when you're sort of passive at home on your couch, but it's great in the stadium, you flip it. Probably the worst place to watch NFL football game is in the stadium. Once you layer in the time, the money,
the cold,
if it's not, you know, September or whatever, and then you like. The best place to watch an NFL game is probably in your house.
On your couch.
Because the beer is cheaper.
Yep.
And the TV's just as good at whatever bar you're going to go to.
I agree.
And you're not going to lose four hours of your life getting out of the parking lot.
And if you're at a bar, like, you can't hear it. You know, you got. I have to watch, especially big games. Maybe I'm just a dork because every single game of a baseball season, I'm all in. Like, I am intense. I'm pacing. I'm nervous.
You're old
like,
school.
I'm freaking out. Like, I'm a huge baseball fan. I love it. And I just don't want anything to change. I don't want them to keep messing with these little rules and stuff like that. I hate that.
Can I get back on the lawn now?
All right, we're going to take a quick break. When we come back, it's time for the next greatest game show ever. Sports Saturdays, exclusive, Hot or Not, with your host, Aaron Wells. Don't go anywhere.
Better turn up the AC, because it's time for Hot or Not. Powered by Superb Cupcakes in Williston. It's Sports Saturday on 101.3 ESPN.
And now, back again, Hot or Not, hosted by your host over here, Aaron Wells. Take it away, Aaron.
I forgot to turn my mic on.
Turn your mic on. Come on now.
I forgot to turn my mic on.
Come on, Alex Trebek.
Hot or Not is thanks to Superb Cupcakes in Williston. Stop by Superb Cupcakes in the Taft Corners Shopping Center in Williston for the best cupcakes around.
I love those cupcakes, man. Oh, those are the best. Moist. Oh, they're unbelievable. Now they're making their own cookie dough, edible cookie dough over there. Check these guys out, Superb Cupcakes. They're amazing.
They won't disappoint, offering a large variety of regular and mini cupcakes and edible cookie dough daily. They're open every day but Monday. Get them early, as hours are subject to change if they sell out.
And he's a Yankee fan. They're Yankee fans. Joe and Hannah are Yankee fans, the owners of it.
Yeah.
Big Yankee fans. Big Eagles fans, too. So, you know, listen, nobody's perfect. Okay? I mean, he's really, they're good with the Yanks. They're just not good with the Eagles. But they make great cupcakes. So, you know what I mean?
All right. 53-year-old Rafael Palmeiro as a Claiborne Railroader is something you would watch.
So, I mean, I'm hot with that. You know what I mean? I mean, he comes back to play baseball. I mean, Rafael Palmeiro, the last time I saw him, he was pointing his finger at Congress saying, you know, I do not do steroids.
Yeah.
Well, I think he did do steroids. But I'd like to see Rafael Palmeiro swing the bat again.
Mr. Palmieri.
That's right. I say I'm hot with that. I'm all in for that.
But I'll stick with my gut. I'd say not, because Rafael Palmeiro, rode off into the sunset. Just don't. I don't need you to come.
Well, he didn't write off. It was more of a bumpy ride into the sunset.
I resigned him to the sunset. Yeah, I got you. Just stay there.
Understood. All right.
All right. The Browns draft created more questions than answers.
So I was in Jamaica for the draft, and there's on the resort that we were on, there's a sports bar there, and they had it on all the big screens, you know, and there were like 15 Cleveland Brown fans that I got to be friends with. And I'm telling you, like, face paint, T-shirts, the helmets, they were ready for
this
draft.
Brought
it to Jamaica. So as we're eating the pizza off the buffet and drinking Bob Marley's at the bar, as we're freaking and getting excited for the draft, they're hooting and hollering, ho, 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 doing their dog bark. And I'll tell you right now, when Baker Mayfield's name came on, hands went up. No more. They're fed up. And then when they got the cornerback instead of getting the defensive end, NC State, the Chubb, I mean, they were just done. But I'm going to say, I would say hot that there are more questions, only because I think these players that they drafted, There are some questions if you're a casual fan, but I think if your guy's inside Cleveland, I think that they know what they're. I trust the Cleveland Brown process right now with the new GM. So I'm going to say hot that there are questions for fans, but I'd say not if you're on the inside. I think they have some. I think they know something.
I think it's hot too. I think it seemed like the guy they had no danger of losing at the fourth pick was going to be Mayfield. Like, he wasn't going in the top three.
Right.
So if that was your guy, get Barkley or Chubb or someone else before you lose your guy. Like, I just double down on the value rather than get the guys you think you want.
Yeah, I agree with that. If they ever drafted Saquon Barkley in the first round, I would have been beside myself. Literally beside myself. I was kind of feeling beside myself that night, by the way. Those Bob Marley drinks are like, whew, look out.
If you were a Power 5 college football school, you would sign 6'7", 270-pound linebacker.
Yeah.
8th grade Keonta Goodwin today, if you could.
So there's a kid in Louisville, Kentucky, that's 6'7", 270 pounds, 8th grader. And he's already getting like offers from these power schools. I'm going to say not. I'm going to say I'm not high on that. A 6'7 kid, it's just so much pressure to put on an 8th grader. I can't imagine being that kid. And you know, you only get so many scholarships. So, I mean, you're putting all you're putting those marbles in there right now. It's a tough one.
Definitely not hot on that. Like, that kid, odds are he's not going to grow that much more, but what if he did? He becomes too big for football.
Well, didn't you say that his doctor said he might be 7'10"?
His doctor predicted when he was 4 that he would grow to be 7'10" based on his bone structure.
That's too big for football.
7'10", 270 pounds. That's
like Andre the Giant.
But what I'm saying, maybe some WWE should give him a call.
Or a basketball team.
Oh, yeah, there you go, yeah.
I don't know if he can move up and down the court at that size.
Doesn't need to.
That's tough. That's a big kid,
You though. Stay right down there on the block and just stay there. We'll just figure it out. 4-on-5 defense. We're just going to lob the ball down you when you get down there.
By the way, apparently I can't read. He is not a 270-pound linebacker. He's 270 pounds LB.
But let me just say this about him. I know, I should have said that. But let me say this. But he's also an amazing athlete. Like, I mean, we're saying this about his size. If you read this article about him, he's an intense athlete. His foot skills are phenomenal. His hands. He's not just a big kid. He's a phenomenal athlete.
Yeah, the colleges aren't just seeking out big kids.
Exactly. But I mean, I'll tell you what. Keep your eye on this one. I think we're not making fun of him at all. He's just going to be a superstar. Are you putting your eggs in one basket? I don't know. 8th grade, that'd be a tough one for me.
With their season over, the 76ers are all in on trying to get LeBron.
Go ahead, Austin. You take this one first.
No. That's not in the process, is it?
Well, listen, I mean, I think that is. I know that there are definitely a Philly Sixer fans out there that want that.
I don't think
that.
He goes.
Why wouldn't you go there? I'm going to say that with this, I think the 76ers probably will be. I'm going to say it's hot. But if I was a Sixer, I would not want that to happen. He's not the guy you want to bring in there. It's just not, you got a youth movement happening. You're coming. You're basically overachieved.
That's what I mean,
this season.
Not.
Yeah, but I think it's hot. I mean, I think he would go there, and I think the Sixers will be interested.
Rockets take game one Monday.
Not. Golden State, when they're fully strength, is the best team in the world. No question about it. And right now, they're full strength. Houston will not win this series, and they will not win game one.
Can't disagree with you there.
I like that.
They are at home, though.
I don't care. Big deal if they're home. But, I mean, the Golden State Warriors are unbelievable. And they're hungry, and they're mad.
They'll make three-pointers anywhere.
Exactly.
So, number six was going to be, you know, LeBron with fumes in the tank will fall victim to the young and confident Celtics in game one. Jeff upped the ante.
Yep.
Celtics win in game, win in five. They win in five.
That's I said before, Jeff is duct taped to that branch all alone.
Duct taped
out on that limb.
Duct tape, and I'll put myself there. Hot, hot, hot. They're going to win the thing in five. I'm telling you right now. I'm just telling you. You know, four is probably pushing. I mean, look, Cleveland's not like, they're not a pushover.
You're more about the gentleman sweep.
The gentleman sweep. You have some one-liners today, Austin. You're on your game. You're on your game.
We'll call him crazy, but KG says four. The firing of Dwayne Casey and snub of Brad Stevens proves that the coaches poll awards mean nothing.
Yeah, I'm going to say hot on that, or in that the people that do vote on these things are not smart, I guess I would say. I don't know what you're watching. I mean, when you look first of all, I think Dwayne Casey's firing is unfortunate for a guy that just won 59 games, but I think it's a product of the Eastern Conference still not being that good. And I think Brad Stevens, I think the bigger topic is that Brad Stevens did not win Coach of the Year. What that guy did with this team that he has, got a lot of talent, but to lose the type of players he did and not win it is just insanely bad.
Not only did he not win, he did not get a single vote from his peers.
It's crazy.
Not getting a vote is the most mind-boggling. Like, it's not like it was close. He wasn't even in the running.
And in a league that starves for good coaches, where you can actually look at the team and say, wow, this team is really well coached.
They're all probably jealous.
Yeah, you're probably right, because they're all so bad. I mean, all they do is, I mean, I'm telling you, it's crazy. I'm surprised he didn't win.
Not even just that they're bad. Most of them don't need to show up to work, because it's a players' league.
I know, I know we're under the gun here, but I have to say, my father went to an L.A. Laker game when Phil Jackson was coaching, and he went to the game. He said, Phil Jackson didn't come out until the end of the second quarter. Just came out in the second quarter, sat down, and that was it. The Lakers just played the game, yeah. That tells you about NBA coaching right there. But Brad Stevens is the real deal.
With young point guard Terry Rozier stepping up and a knee injury looming over him, Kyrie should be traded for pieces by the Celtics.
Nope.
I would say that's definitely a not. Kyrie Irving is one of the top five or six players in the league right now.
Is he when he comes back, though?
Yes. Yes, he is.
After Hayward went down, he was a revelation. Yep. Like, not that people didn't know he was great, but like, he was carrying them through that first stretch when they weren't losing.
Very true.
All right. The MLB will succeed in their international ventures in Mexico, Montreal, and London.
So I don't know if you heard this story or not, Austin, but, you know, Manfred wants to, you know, there could be some expansion, bringing baseball back to Montreal, bringing Expos back, and there was even some talk about maybe putting a team in Mexico. Hot or not?
Hotter on that than putting a football team in London.
Oh, my God. Yeah, that's so cold. Yeah, I'm hot on Montreal. I'm a little cold on the Mexico thing. I mean, a team in Mexico right now, with everything going on down there, just like in terms of like some of the safety issues they have down there with some of the things going on. I mean, I'm nervous to go on vacation there. I can't imagine having a baseball team there.
I think that's a logical spot. Like, if they could put an MLB team in Mexico, Puerto Rico, or the Dominican, that would be super cool.
To me, Puerto Rico and the Dominican is that would I'd be all over that, because those are two meccas for baseball. And you see the fans. Was it Puerto Rico that they just had Cleveland and Minnesota play the series in?
I think so. Yeah.
And Lindor came back to Puerto Rico. Those people were insane for baseball. I could definitely be
also,
in that.
Also, it's part of America. Like, there aren't that many hoops you'd have to jump through to make it.
That's very true.
Yeah, and Montreal is starved for baseball. I mean, the number of Expos jerseys still walking around.
Oh, yeah, man. People want their Expos back. I mean, in every year in the preseason.
All 9,000 of them?
Oh, I'm telling you. The Expos fans go to games, man. I feel bad what happened with Montreal. The reason that they fell apart up there was their stadium was terrible, and they just kind of sold out. They kind of sold off towards the end.
True.
But, I mean, that fan base is rabid. And let me say this, every year Toronto plays a preseason game up there in Olympic Stadium right before the season starts, and they pack that place. They pack it. So I'd love to see the Expos come back. And whenever the Yankees would go to play Montreal, I got some cheap tickets right behind the dugout.
Oh, that was, yeah.
I used to love that. Those were some good days.
Well, that is hot or not for this week. Sophia wrote the list, so it was pretty good.
Oh, Sophia did the list this week?
She did.
Man. So look at you, man. You got the good haircut. You got all the swag, the 101.3 swag going, the hat, the t-shirt, and you got the girlfriend doing your work for you. Good for you. You're doing something right. Interesting conversation, though, about baseball going international. I think it's a great idea. The Yankees are playing the Red Sox next year in London. That'll be very interesting.
Yeah, that's like, I'm curious to see how that's received there.
Me too. Like, why London, I guess, would be my question. I mean, you know, maybe a Yankee Red Sox game in Puerto Rico, maybe a Yankee Red Sox game in the Dominican, like you mentioned.
Yeah.
But London, interesting.
It's a big market and no language barrier.
Again, Austin, that's why you're the award-winning writer, and I'm just a hack talking on the radio. All right, we're going to take a quick break. When we come back, we're going to tie a bow on this show. 2 hours went by so fast. Don't go anywhere.
Sports Saturday with Jeff Paul.
Patriots haven't moved up in the draft because they know Trace McSorley will still be there at 31.
And Bernie Siplicki.
With the 31st pick in the 2018 NFL Draft, the New England Patriots select Sony Michel, running back, Georgia.
This is Sports Saturday with Jeff Paul and Bernie Siplicki on 101.3 ESPN.
Austin, well done again.
Thanks, big guy.
Filling in for the big fella, Bernie, who's on sabbatical this week. He's double dipping.
Is he on sabbatical or on assignment?
No, he's on assignment. That's right. I use the word sabbatical. He uses assignment for us. Yeah, but he actually really is on assignment. I think he's got a couple games over at Colchester. He's been out there getting fields lined. And
he's administrating.
You know, he's doing his administrative work. He's a very good administrator. Anytime you get to go hang out with Bernie doing his administrative work, it's always a joy. He's so miserable. You know what I mean? Like, It's funny. The other day I went over to see him, and he just walks away from me. Don't come near. I'm working.
Well, usually it's when I see that, it's because like you're trying to play a soccer game and it's pouring rain, and he's trying to make the field playable. And
God bless him.
He's got like waders on.
You remember that playoff game with CBU? He's out there like. By the way, Bernie, I did notice that you put a lot more of that dry stuff in the CBU goal than the Colchis goal. I'm just saying that day.
Hopefully Stan's listening.
I'm just playing. I love my Bernie. Hey, guys, thanks for listening. I want to thank Peter Abraham of the Boston Globe. Good insight about the Red Sox-Yankee rivalry. He was in the Bronx, obviously, this week. Very intense, he said down there.
Yeah.
Yeah, man, a few words. That's very good. Nick Gelso, Celtic blog writer for SB Nation. He loves his Celtics. Can't believe I said Celtics in five, but he definitely is all in for his Celtics. Want to thank his insight. And look, I mean, you know, interesting game starts tomorrow. Cleveland Celtics. You can listen to it on the Zone too. Starting at the game is at 3 o'clock. Coverage starts at 3 o'clock on one of our sister stations, the Zone here. So listen to them at 3 o'clock. But big game tomorrow. Celtics Cleveland. LeBron James against Brad Stevens' mind. What do you think?
Bigger game at 8. Caps.
Oh, that's right. Your Capitals. Oh, man. Yeah. So let me ask you this question. So right now, Capitals just, you want them to win so bad, right?
Oh, yeah.
Are you feeling the same way? Like the 04 Red Sox and the 18 Caps, are they like comparative to you right now?
04 Red Sox rank above the 18 Caps.
Okay.
It's like house money right now. It's great.
Oh, really? So you're going to sit here and tell me right now it's house mice. You're good with whatever happens from this point forward?
We vanquished the Penguins. We got to the conference finals. Someone was texting me. I was like, I like our chances because it's a blank slate.
Said by the only Capital fan in the country saying that is right here, Austin Danforth. Every Capital fan, you and I both know, if they end up blowing this thing and not getting to this thing and winning this thing, they are going to freak out again. My buddy Taylor Jensen, who's a huge, huge Caps fan, he gets on the show once in a while. He's like up and down with them. He freaks out. And then Valerie Pilato, I want to thank her. She came on. She's the head of the Josh Pilato Fund. It's an organization that raises money for PTSD awareness and does very a lot cool of work stuff. For them. Today is their fourth annual Josh Pilato Fund hockey tournament at Carnes Arena. It starts at noon, so it starts in 2 minutes. Spend the day over there. It's only until 6. Watch a couple hockey games. Then go to the poorhouse after for the after party. That's my kind of thing.
Hydration.
It's always good to be hydrated, especially on a warm day. Hey, all the mothers out there, happy Mother's Day, especially my mom, Angela Paul. I love you.
My mom, Deb Danforth.
Yeah, happy Mother's Day to you. And and my mother-in-law, Nadine Higgins, up in Bangor, Maine. I'm sure she listens. I'm sure she's listening. Not.
You guys aren't going to show me up. I love you, Mom.
Yeah, make sure you say that as well to your mother. And hey, listen, I do have to say, last time I was on the show, I said that my niece is a really good painter, and I didn't know where she got it in the family. My mother, my mother's an insane painter and drawer, so that's where she gets her talent from. So Bailey Paul, great job on your art projects, and you got it from your grandmother. All right, guys, have a great week. We'll be back next week with another local show on this station. We're Sports Saturday. Have a great weekend.